So when we once we made it to Iraq, it was just, what do I have to do right now to stay alive?
Oh, like,
right this moment.
Welcome to Hustlin' in Heels podcast. This is Stacy
and Kaylee,
and we are so happy that you're joining us again for another week, another great guest, and another fun time where we drink wine and we talk about issues that are important to women.
I think my wine glass is chipped.
That scratching you here is Kaylee. she's not looking at a squirrel somewhere. She's doing the equivalent and picking at her wine glass as we are starting off this show.
Sad day.
I know where you can get more.
That's true. I have a whole box in my trunk.
Speaking of wine glasses, we're totally going to put that out there. We have been getting quite a bit of feedback that you guys want to drink with us in Hustlin' Heels wine glasses as you're listening to us. So that's pretty cool. So we're gonna get those up on our website at hahpod.com. So look for that, and we will have a way for you to purchase these amazing Hustlin' in Heels wine glasses that were produced by Mary Jo at Competitive Edge. So thank you so much for that. We love, love, love them. So, Kaylee, it's Wednesday. Just kidding.
Wait, Thursday. What?
I've been thinking it's Wednesday all week, but it's not. It's Thursday.
It's Thursday.
And it's been a very busy week. So, what you been up to?
I was all over the place today. Kalamazoo met with a great organization, actually, today. The YMCA in Kalamazoo took a tour of their facility. It's under construction right now, but they're doing great things. So if you need a gym, and particularly if you have a family, that's totally, they have all the accommodations to not make sure your kids don't, like, you know, die while you work out.
Always
they can
plus.
Keep your kids alive
Always
while you're on
plus.
The treadmill or whatever, you know. And they have, actually, what I found crazy, they have indoor tennis courts at the Y. I don't know why.
That not like, pickleball, like tennis.
No, like full-size tennis courts.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That'd be the kind of tennis I'd want to play, because whenever I've played tennis, like the four times, that ball goes every fucking place.
Yeah.
Except for over the net. It'll go over the fence. It'll go into the other court. So if I was feel like it was in a room, it would just stay confined in that room.
I like your logic. I
wouldn't have to chase it down.
Yeah.
Across the
I'm
other.
Just imagining it like bouncing off of like every other
I mean,
wall
that,
as you chase it.
That's going to happen.
Not, I mean.
Added exercise. But at least it's in a confined location. So that's kind of what I was thinking about. But speaking of gyms, man, my new gym.
I've heard
in
good things.
Love. So let me give a quick shout out to Redbud Fitness, which is a brand new gym in my beloved hometown. Listeners, you know I love my little small hometown, my little Mayberry. It is a state-of-the-art facility that is huge. Not only does it have three pickleball courts, but it has an indoor track. It has spinning classes. It has exercise rooms. It has, I don't know, cardio circuit. It has a pool. It has saunas. It has everything. And what makes it even better is it has the coolest staff ever. So shout
that
out.
That makes a difference.
It's huge. It's great to see smiling, happy, friendly faces that you know when you walk in the door, and they're super helpful. And Teresa Green and her staff, you guys knocked it out of the park. So it's just awesome to see a woman. This isn't okay. We celebrate women here. Teresa Green started a Bucktown studio years ago in this small little building in Buchanan. And with the whole idea of she had on the wall, she believes she could, so she did, or something, something to that effect. And it was this whole idea of like a place for women of all shapes and sizes and confidence levels to go be together, do workout classes together, like just come on down and be a part of it. So that developed like this huge cult following because it was such an amazing environment to be in. So she took that idea and it grew and grew and grew and grew and turned that into this huge complex for our town, which, again, our town is not big. And so to have this facility is just amazing. And it all started from this dream that she had to empower women. And now it's really empowering an entire community to get fit. So
that's awesome.
Awesome. Teresa Guerin, you are the coolest.
I can't wait to take a tour.
Yeah, it's super cool.
I've heard from multiple people that, you know, some of them don't even live in Buchanan.
Yeah.
They're driving to Buchanan to go.
It's so good. I love it. So I already did my workout this morning, so I can drink what I'm drinking mm-hmm. right now and feel okay about it. So we're drinking some red wine tonight. What kind did you get us?
So I was thinking about what would our guest want? What would she want? And I walk into a local grocery store, and this is the first bottle I see. It is the Walking Dead blood red wine.
Yes. It's amazing. It's amazing. So
yeah.
Do you agree that this is an amazing bottle of wine, Miss Adele?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes. Yes. So that voice that you hear is the one, the only Adele Garcia.
Arguably the biggest Walking Dead fan on the planet.
100%.
Yeah.
Such a big Walking Dead fan that, in fact, she is leaving for spring break this weekend. Where are you going?
I'm going to Georgia. I'm going where they film it.
Yep. She's going to Walk with the Dead.
Yeah, I'm going to go stalk out some actors and try to track them down.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. You're going to, too. Like, if anyone's going to be successful, it's going to be you.
I better. Yeah, I'm not leaving until I find somebody.
So I hope we can still be friends after I say this, but I've never seen an episode of The Walking Dead.
I'll forgive you. It's okay.
Me neither.
Cheers. So we have tons to talk about when it comes to this. Mm-hmm.
Now, what made it really interesting as I was buying this bottle of wine is, one, I'm in a hurry because I'm never on time anywhere I go. And I was hungry, so I bought Goldfish, too. A solid snack. And the guy behind me I think he just felt sorry for me, so he actually let me cut him. Because I just had two bottles of wine, actually, because I had a backup in case the Walking Dead wine was bad. But two bottles of wine and Goldfish. And he's like, yeah, I think that the Goldfish will pair really nicely with that. And I was like, I looked at him for a second, and then I looked down, and I was like, oh, you're being funny.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, so if you're wondering what pairs nicely with the Walking Dead, blood red,
Goldfish. Wine, Goldfish. Standard. No fancy flavors. Mm-hmm. You're just standard Goldfish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are so many flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Moms know. Anyways. So why are we talking to Adele? Well, let me count the ways.
Why aren't we talking to Adele?
We've been very excited for her to join us with our podcast. If you can think about someone who is the picture of badass, mm-hmm. that would be Adele Garcia. Mm-hmm. For multiple reasons. So mm-hmm. let's give a little preview. Not only is she a hustler in the financial institution that she works for and in a leadership position there, that's her day job, right? She does that. As we've already established, she's a huge Walking Dead fan, and I know that will be a good thing for many of you listeners, but she's an Army veteran. And she has served our country and nobly, might I mm-hmm. add. And not only that, but she has taken that experience and has turned it into quite a few positive things that she's going to talk about tonight. So without further ado, you're here.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. We're excited that you're here and we're excited that you're drinking some wine with us. And we want to know more about your story. So give the listeners a preview. If I say, who is Adele Garcia? Who are you?
Well, I am an Army veteran, and I'm also a mom and a career woman and a wife and all of that good stuff. But I guess, do you want me to start with the Army?
Yeah, let's start stuff? There. Let's start with the Army stuff.
Sure. So I never dreamt I'd be in the Army. That was not like, I wasn't in kindergarten thinking I'm going to join the Army one day. Actually, far from it. I wanted to be a marine biologist, but so completely opposite direction. But out of high school, I wanted to go to college, but didn't have any money. So my sister was talking to a recruiter and said, my little sister is going to graduate high school and I think she'd be a great candidate, even though I was a total sissy poo and super girly girl. Oh yeah, I was a super girly girl. I would cry. If you hurt my feelings, I would cry. I mean, I was athletic, but yeah. I was not like, yeah, I would have panic attacks and anxiety attacks. Like if I was in really big, just like stressful situations. I didn't know how to like handle anything.
I would never.
Yeah. In a million years.
Yep. In fact, when I came home and told my parents, My mom was like, no way. She's like, you're never going to make it. Like, you know, my dad was pretty excited, but my mom wasn't. And then as I started telling people before I left, a lot of people said, it's going to be okay when you come home early. Like, we all understand if you quit. Yeah. And so at that point on, I said, nope, I can't quit.
Because we didn't mention in your introduction, but you're also a little stubborn.
Very stubborn.
Have you always been stubborn?
Yeah, I've always been stubborn.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, all the people out there that told me that it'd be okay to quit, you know, maybe they were doing it subconsciously to, you know, reverse psychology, but it worked because I never quit and I, you know, proved them wrong. So, yeah. So I was in the Army and...
So you went into the Army. What was that? So talk about that whole, like, recruitment process. Like, what?
So back then, that was 98. So that's way before... you know, all the combat situations we've been involved with. And so at the time, I thought I'd do my 4 years, be in and out, you know, no big deal. Nothing had happened since 91. You know, we're at
peacetime.
Right,
and that was a quick and easy one.
Yeah, so, you know, like my recruiter was like, it'll be great. You'll get your $40,000 for college. You'll be on your way. And so, you know, went to basic training. And within, like, the first day, I realized I was in over my head. And it was pretty intense. But the one thing I think I learned from being in the military was adaptability. So that's something I've always been good at, is being able to adapt to my surroundings. And I learned that right off the bat. You know, don't volunteer. You know, don't stand out. Don't try to be better than anybody else. Just do your thing. Keep your head down and just do what you got to do to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, because those that tried to kiss the drill sergeant's butt or volunteered, those were the ones that really got put through the ringer. So, you know, I learned that early on. And if you figured that out, you I don't want to say it was easy, but it made it a little bit easier to get through. Yep. So, and then, you know, I went through basic and basic training, boot camp, and then advanced training, and then went and was stationed out in Fort Lewis, Washington.
And it was not an easy 4 years and you're done.
No. So ironically, so it kind of was at first. So I ended up meeting my husband. We got married, had a kid. And towards the end of the first enlistment, it was either time to get in, stay in, or get out. And so we both decided to get out because we had a kid and we wanted to move back closer to family. So we got out, and this was right before 2001 or 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the summer of 9/11. I still had a year of reserve time to do, but that's like an active reserve time. So
sure.
It's like no big deal.
Right.
I'll finish my last year as inactive. Nothing will happen. So I got out in July of 2001, and then 9/11 happened, and I was National Guard. I actually transitioned to National Guard, and within, you know, the first day of 9/11, I looked at my husband, and I said, this is it. Like, something's going down. You know, we just knew before, you know, anything was announced. And
yeah. So talk through that day. I'm always interested in where people were, because obviously it's one of those days that everyone remembers.
Mm-hmm.
But as someone who's serving, talk through that day.
So even more of an ironic situation, that was actually our one-year wedding anniversary. So
wow.
We were married on 9/11/2000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So we had taken the day off of work, you know, to be together, and our daughter was just shy of a year old.
Yeah.
So we were planning on sleeping in, just having a chill day, and my mother-in-law is, like, blowing our phone up, you know, and this is before cell phones, like, still have a landline. And I'm like, God, and, like, she will not stop calling. So we finally, my husband gets up. And she tells him, like, you got to turn on the TV. And so the first tower had already been hit. The second one hadn't yet. And we sat there and watched it, you know, as it happened. And it was just, it was kind of like, almost like another world. You know what I mean? Like a dream landscape, because you just couldn't believe it was happening. You're like, what is happening right now? And I remember Alessandra kind of like just toting around. She was a little like, she was like 9 months old. She's hobbling around trying to walk. And I remember looking at her thinking like, oh my God, like what is this world? Like, what's happening, you know? And so a little bit of terrified and, you know, nervous about what's going to happen with us. And
you knew right away.
Yeah. I mean, I mean,
coming from a military background, you knew you were probably thinking steps ahead from what civilians were thinking.
Right. Yeah. Because, I mean, like by the time the second tower was hit and then I think the Pentagon was next and then Pennsylvania, you know, by that time, you know, nothing was clarified for days. But We knew this was not an accident. This was definitely an act of terrorism, you know, by who we didn't know, but we knew that, you know, something was going down.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, my National Guard unit, like, things just started happening. They didn't tell us right away we would be deployed, but, like, over the next course of a year, they would, like, just do different things to, like, kept prepping us, but they never would tell us that we're going anywhere. So they changed our job types and sent us to additional training and, you know, started consolidating different National Guard units. And, you know, we would ask, like, well, what's going on? And they'd just be like, well, we're just, you know, trying to be more efficient. And we're like,
Hashtag mobilization.
Yeah. I'm like, we don't trust you. So I think it was fall of 2003. And we had just bought our first house and we're still living out of boxes. And that's when I got the call that we'd be going. Well, I would be going. My husband wasn't, but yeah.
Okay. That you would be going. All right. Yep. And so what's that like? What did they say? How does that go down?
So the first call, they were looking for volunteers. And what they wanted was people from all over Michigan to come join a unit out of Howell, which is outside of Lansing.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough bodies, but that... The way the military works, it's like a big chessboard, you know, and strategy, and they decide what units are going depending upon location and what type of jobs you do. And so that unit was getting activated, but they didn't have enough people, so they needed volunteers. If they didn't get enough volunteers, then they would just force you to go. Mm-hmm. So the first call I got was to tell us that, like, this, you might be being forced to go if they don't get enough volunteers. I said, okay. I'm like, all right, I'll start, like, mind prepping for that. And then... my best friend, Amy, who is also in the Army, she's a total badass. I mean, she's still in. I think she's a commander now. She's a captain. Total badass. But she called me and said, hey, did they call you about the volunteers? And I said, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll just wait and see if they're going to force us to go. And she's like, well, I'm going. She's like, and so is so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, all the people from our squad and in our unit. And she's like, you got to go. She's like, we got to go together. And I was like, okay. I'm like, all right, I was like, I got to talk to some people. I got to talk this out. So the first person I called was my dad and talked it out with him. And he's like, you got to go. He's like, those are your people. He's like, that's who you've trained with. Like, they're the ones that are going to have your back, you know? Like, they know you in and out. Like, you got to go to war with them. And so I got off the phone with him. I hadn't even told my husband yet and called the called the National Guard back and was like, I'm in. When do we leave?
Just chills. I listen to the story. If you didn't volunteer to go with them, was there potential that you would be placed with other people?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So basically they were, you know, if I wouldn't have went with them, I for sure would have went with another unit like later on that year.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
So you said you were, when you got the first phone call, you were starting to mind prep. What does that mean?
I don't know. It's like you just start telling yourself, like, okay, this is really happening. You know, because at this point, it was 2003. The invasion into Baghdad had already happened. Afghanistan had been going on for a little over a year. We already had two friends in Afghanistan. So, you know, we had already known a little bit about what was going on. And so you just start, like, kind of going into that mode of, okay, I'm going to leave my family. And I guess when you're in the military, you learn how to disassociate from people and, like, emotions. So you learn how to just turn things off. I don't know if they train you for it, but they, part of basic training and advanced training is, like, they really strip you down to your bare emotions. You know, they strip you down so that you feel worthless. You have nobody to talk to. You don't have family to rely on. You have nothing. And you have to learn how to just pick yourself back up on your own. So I guess when I say mind prepping, in my mind, it's like you just learn how to, like, channel that stuff and, like, compartmentalize. Am I saying that right? Those emotions, I just started shutting things down, you know?
Yeah. It's like shutting off lights and rooms.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Pretty much. Yep.
Prepping to go away.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, and the hardest one was probably my daughter, you know, turning that light off.
Oh, for sure.
And, but, you know, you just, yeah, I just started kind of just, okay, this is going to happen and I got to get ready to go.
So how do you tell your husband then?
So I waited till he got home from work. Mm-hmm. Well, he worked a job where I couldn't call him, you know, we didn't have cell phones, so couldn't just call him. He got home from work that night. He worked second shift and I was like, hey, I'm going to Iraq. And he's like, well, I figured you would. once you meet Milo, you'll get it. Like, he's always been with me. Even of all the crazy decisions I've made over the years, he's always just like,
he just rolls.
All right, let's do it. I'm like, where do I gotta be? What do I gotta do? And so he's just very just, like, chill and just stable. And so he was like, all right, it's going to happen. So what's next? You know? Hmm. Yeah. So.
All right. So you call, you say, I'm in. Now what?
So then we had to wait. We had a little bit of time. That was, like, early October. And we started doing a lot of, like, additional training. You know, they call it SRP, which don't ask me what that stands for anymore because I can't remember. Everything's like acronyms in the Army. But we go up to Camp Grayling. You start like getting prepared, you know, mm-hmm. going through all your equipment, you know, making your will, getting your like all of your power of attorneys and all that kind of stuff ready. And all
didn't
that
even think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm like,
Wait, what? Like, yeah. I know you got to like go shoot your guns and like get all of your equipment. Totally didn't think about the paperwork that you have to do
yeah.
to prepare.
It's probably a good week's worth. You know, there's so much to go through. You know, you got to make sure your family's, all their insurance is covered. And yeah. there's just everything you could think of on a personal level we have to do.
That makes it real quick.
Yeah. And I was only 23, I should say, at the time. So I had just turned 23 when this was all going down. And, you know, so I had to make my will, you know, like who's the custodian of my daughter if my husband dies while I'm gone and I die and just all mm-hmm. those little things. You got to think all that through like really quick. You got to be like, okay, who do I trust?
Yeah.
who's going to make all my decisions if Milo's not around? So.
Luckily in the military, they probably teach you to make decisions quickly and be decisive and move with it.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, you don't really have a lot of time and or ever to like just him-ha and think mm-hmm. about what you want to do. You mm-hmm. just got to like commit to it and just be like, that's the way we're going.
We'll circle back to that because I feel
I'm like, I have so much more context into your daily struggle right now.
Is that all making sense now? You're like, oh, uh-huh. yeah. Yep.
Uh-huh. I forgot to mention we all work together. Yes. Yeah. So, all right. So you get your stuff ready. Then what?
So we ended up leaving. We shipped over to Howell right before Christmas, I believe, of 2003. And I remember that's right around the time they captured Saddam Hussein. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mom calling me and she was like, you're not going now because they got him. They got him. So they're, you know, they're going to kill him and then everything will be fine. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really work that way, Mom. But, you know, I'm glad you're so positive and hopeful. we went to Howell. We got to come home for Christmas and New Year's, but then we had to go back. And just more preparation because we had to take all of our vehicles. So I was a truck driver. I didn't say that. I was a truck driver. And we drove basically like semis, like the military version of a semi. So we had to prepare all of our vehicles and tractors and trailers and everything to ship to Iraq. So it's a quite a process. Yes. So we had mm-hmm. to drive, we had to prep them, drive them from Michigan to Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, prep them again, get them on railroad cars, and then they were shipped to Mississippi and put on big barges, and then they went across the Atlantic Ocean to Kuwait.
Wow.
And then once we got to Kuwait, we got them off and prepped them again and then got ready to drive them into Iraq.
Yeah. You don't think of all of the logistics that are involved in moving and mobilizing an entire army and everything that goes with it. Mm-hmm. And you think about, as a former history teacher, right? Like you think about how amazing it was that they did this type of mobilization even back during World War I, World mm-hmm. War II, where they didn't have the technological capabilities that we have now.
Right.
I mean, just the months of time that it would take to mm-hmm. move those chess pieces around mm-hmm. the globe. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, like World War II, like they call the greatest generation.
Yeah.
I mean, I can stand tall and say that they are the greatest generation because I don't know how they did any of what they did without the technology we had, without, you know, anything.
Yep.
And then they fought like hand to hand combat, like legit.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a whole nother talk.
It's a whole nother talk. That's like
another episode. Podcast.
Secondary podcast. Okay. So that process takes.
We were
weeks,
there.
Months.
Yeah, months. So we went to Wisconsin.
I need more wine for this. Keep going. I'm stressed out already, and it happened 15 years ago.
Right. Went to Wisconsin. We were there until end of February. Yeah. Yeah. So we landed in Kuwait on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day.
Did you have a party? Please tell me you had a beer.
No. God. No, we couldn't. We couldn't drink. But we partied like hell leading up to it. In Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, is like a little army base. It's like a reserve base. And they have like a little bar there. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's even back in the day when you could smoke in bars. So that was like, man, and I was a hardcore smoker. So you know, we're getting ready to go to combat.
Yeah.
So
what are you going to do?
Yeah. Smoke and drink.
Smoke them if you got them. Live it up.
Yeah. That's what we did every single night pretty much until we left, you know, got on that plane. I think some people were probably still drunk when we got on the plane.
I mean, that has to be the party of your life, you know, like leading up to that because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and there's got to be so much love, honestly, surrounding like the people that you're with and just camaraderie. And
yeah,
I at least I hope that's how it is, because that's how it should be. And that's how I would hope it would be for people who are going off to fight for their country. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like just that you get to enjoy and like. Yeah.
I mean, I think there was drama, you know, there was definitely, like, you know, people that didn't get along or whatever. Oh, yeah, but for the most part, I mean, you know, you have your platoons, which like, so if you think of a platoon, that's usually about 40 to 50 people. Uh-huh. And then within a platoon, you got a squad, which is usually like 8 to 10 people. So usually your squad, like you hear the, you know, squad goals, like that's kind of what I think it comes from, because, you know, your squad in the military is like, those are your people, you know, that's who you're with 24 hours a day, pretty much. So usually like when people go out to drink, you drink with your squad.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, people, you would interact with other squads or platoons, but
I get that. I drink with my squad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
basically the same thing.
Yeah.
It really not is. At all. Cause we don't go to combat. So.
Don't get shot at. That's okay.
No,
that's
we don't get shot at. No. Oh, so you get to Kuwait. It's, St. Patrick's Day.
Yep.
2003.
No, 2004.
Yeah. 2004. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hot as hell.
Hot as hell.
Yeah. And so that's the other funny thing. We did all of our training in the winter in Wisconsin.
Oh.
Like, and it was so cold in Wisconsin. There were days where our eyelashes, I have a picture where you could see all of the ice cubes forming on our eyelashes. I mean, it was freezing and we were like waist deep in snow, like outside training. And we were even like joking around, like, how the hell is this going to prepare us for the desert?
Right.
Like, I've never been to the desert, but like, I'm not stupid enough. Like,
this ain't
I know.
It's not going to be snow.
Right. It's not going to be like negative 20 degrees outside.
Did somebody raise their hand like, y'all, can we go out to like Nevada and train for this or what?
I know.
No, they're like, no, you're stuck in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yep. So we get to Kuwait, hot as hell. Like literally, as soon as they opened up those, like the door on the airplane and we start walking out, it's like, holy
you're
shit.
Just, like with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally just
so,
different
hold
world.
On though. You drink and smoke every night. Mm-hmm. You train in the snow every day. Like, the endurance makes sense to me now. Also.
It's all coming together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ran. We did everything in the snow.
It takes me like 2 days to recover from one night of drinking.
Okay, I was 23 also at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody was in their early 20s. I think like the oldest people
so you
back
can rally.
Then. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. We would go out, not to digress too much, but, I had a couple different nicknames.
I cannot wait.
Oh, one of which was Booze Hag. Yep. Booze Hag.
Booze Hag.
Yep. One of my buddies got me a beer bottle opener for Christmas. But I still have it too. But, I was a Jaeger drinker and I could drink. I could put down 10, 15 shots of Jaeger in one night, one sitting, just straight.
Damn, girl.
That's what I would do.
Nice.
Drink Jaeger. I'd get up and drink like a small bottle of apple juice, and I'd be fine.
Well, you knew what you could do, and that was your choice.
Yeah, capitalized on my strength.
You stayed
that was
right
your
in your
liquor.
Lane.
Yeah. Yeah. God, that makes my stomach turn.
Oh, I could never do that now. I'd be dead.
This, honestly,
I would be dead.
So, the smell of Jaeger
I know.
Now.
I know. Yeah.
I don't mind a Jaeger bomb.
No. Yeah, Jaeger bombs are all right.
No.
Yeah, I used to do it straight, though. Straight Jaeger.
Ugh.
Yep.
All right. Another reason why. We got to put another reason in the badass column.
Yep.
10, 15 shots
and then,
of Jaeger.
If you don't realize that, I don't know if you know this or not, but Wisconsin's like Jaeger capital of the world.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it really is, but it felt like it because every bar, like we get to go out like outside a post and like every bar had Jaeger on tap. Like they'd have
on
their cool
tap?
Yes. There are Jaeger taps. It's a thing. They'd have their own little special cooler and they'd have the bottles in it.
In
and
Wisconsin?
They would just...
Okay.
Yes.
I'm asking Matt Malone.
I would say,
ask him.
Oh, that's a good idea. I was gonna say, listeners in Wisconsin, if you are at a bar with a Jaeger tap, we want to see a picture.
Oh, I need a picture.
We need a picture. Matt Malone, if you're listening.
This was 14, 15 years ago, so I don't know if it's still a thing,
maybe
but
we
I
should
swear
take
to God.
A field trip.
There you go.
Yes.
All right. What bars do we need to go to that have Jaeger on tap?
We will do a live recording from your bar if it has a Jaeger tap.
Yeah. It's a fame.
All right. So like Booze Hag.
Yep.
You get off. You're in Kuwait.
Mm-hmm. It's hot as hell. And it's like blinding. Like the sun is like so bright there. Like you just can't even like, it like hurts your retinas. It's so bright. And I remember like we got to our camp and we were kind of getting settled in and literally like, so we had a huge tent for like 200 of us. We were so cramped. They didn't have enough room for everybody. Because right when we were going to or Kuwait to go to Iraq was right around the time when one of the big units that was already in Iraq, they were being told they had to stay longer. So they had made it all the way to Kuwait and their orders got extended. Mm. So they were turning back around. And so there was too many people, but it was what it was. So
How pissed were they?
Oh, they were bitter. Bitter. Yeah. Yeah. And they were so battle worn torn. I remember
it's just so hard to do that and then to think that you're going home.
Yeah.
And they
had been there through the hell, the real hell. It was hell for me too, but it was real hell for them. The first wave of people. And I remember being in line at the chow hall and which is
Okay, that's food, right?
That's a dining facility, but sometimes you hear it called DFAC, but we call it chow hall. But I was behind a guy and he was his uniform was super bleached out white. He just the back of his neck was super brown and he just looked whooped. Mm. And somebody else struck up a conversation with him and he's like, whatever you do, he's like, just don't go. He's like, figure out a way to stay here in Kuwait, get hurt, do something stupid. Mm. He was pretty much telling us break a rule or something so you get in trouble. He's like, you don't want to go.
Wow.
And I was like,
oh, well, that's a nice way to start out.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. So I'm not going to break any rules and I'm not going to get hurt just to stay here. So this is great.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So yeah, then
can't wait.
Yeah.
When's the next train leave?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. I'm like, no, I think I got off the wrong stop. So yeah.
You must have me mistaken.
Yeah, I did not sign up for this.
Oh, Adele, no.
No, I'm booze hag. I'm not Adele.
Oh, there's no Jaeger here? There's no Jaeger on tap in Kuwait? What? So we got ready to go and there's only one way into Iraq. There's one main road from Kuwait, and it went periods of time where it'd be blocked off because there'd be so much combat going on. And so we had to wait for the all clear that we could go. And so the day that we had our convoy, our group of trucks had to go, there was a couple thousand trucks, different units that all had to go. So literally, if you can envision 131, because that's kind of their highway system looks just like ours, 131 north. Think of cars just backed up bumper to bumper for as far as the eye can see. That was us Americans going into Iraq. Hi, how you doing?
Yeah. Hey, we're here.
We're here. Yeah. So we know you already hate us and you want to kill us. So we're just going to be a really slow moving target for the next 200 miles. So just take your stab at us.
Yeah.
So we got hit. Our first attack was probably, we made it just south of Baghdad, probably about 30 miles or so.
Holy
if I had
shit.
To guess. And we got attacked with RPGs, and we had our first casualty, which he survived, but RPG hit underneath his driver's seat, and he got shrapnel in his leg, and so it was we had to go. Let's say you're leaving here, and you're gonna go to Traverse City, so and you get hit by Wayland. So we still had from Wayland to Traverse City, just to kind of put it in perspective.
So for those of you not familiar with Michigan, from where we're sitting to Traverse City is about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't even actually imagine where Wayland is. So how far?
2 hours.
Okay, so
maybe?
Halfway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we weren't even halfway to our end point when we were completely at a dead stop. We had an injury. We're like, fuck.
Welcome yeah. to
and my yeah. and my buddy that was with me. So we all have a battle buddy. You have your one mm-hmm. person that's your go to person. Well, my guy, he's also a gunner. So he had his machine gun. He was in another truck. So we were separated. And so the guy I had with me, great guy, he was super young. I was 23. He was super young. He had just turned 18. He was just a baby.
Wow.
And I had promised his mom before we left that I would take good care of him. Well, he was scared shitless. I mean, we were all scared shitless. I was scared shitless. And, we're sitting there literally sitting ducks and he was just a mess. And I'm like, just keep it together, dude. You just got to keep it together. We're okay. Dude up ahead is okay. They're going to get him out of here. We're going to make it. And he's like, we're not even at our freaking, we're not even home yet. Home as in our camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's all right. I'm trying to console him. And I'm just a mess.
In your
I'm
mind, you're like.
Yeah. While we're laying on the asphalt and it's hot as hell. And we're.
Doesn't
yeah.
home, the real home seem so far away?
Yeah. At that point, I stopped thinking about it.
You just stopped thinking about it.
Yeah. I think I stopped. Probably when we left Wisconsin, my husband and daughter came up to see me maybe a week or two before we officially left. They came up for one last weekend visit. And And it's funny, he's like, I'm kind of a bitch. Like, I didn't actually want them to come up at all.
Well, once it we just were in makes Wisconsin. It makes it harder.
Yeah. And he got like really mad at me because he was like, well, you don't love us. I'm like, no, it's just that like, you don't understand. Like, this is like, it's like messing with my psyche. You know, I see you, then you have to leave. And then it's got to be hard on our baby. Like, she was only three or going to be three. So, you know.
Yeah. She doesn't understand.
Yeah. Why is mommy, you know, not coming home with us? So, but once they left that final time, I pretty much just, that was when I finally turned the lights off on them and was like, you know, I love them, but I can't even think about them. I can't think about anything with that life. You got to just put it to the side, you know? So when once we made it to Iraq, it was just, what do I have to do right now to stay alive?
Oh,
like
damn,
right this moment.
Just this, I mean, this is just you, but think about that multiplied, you know, the sacrifices that the men and women in the military make with their families at home. Damn. So, all right. So you're not even there yet.
Yeah. We won't go through this day by day.
I'm riveted. So keep going.
You should write a book.
You know, so that's on my bucket list.
Yeah.
It has been for like the last 15 years. It is. One day I'll do it. I know I will. You know, we finally made it to our final destination, Camp Anaconda, which is in Balad, Iraq, which is north of Baghdad.
What?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Bones, huh? And we got there and we're all exhausted. I mean, this like little, it's kind of like Gilligan's Island, you know, this 3-hour trip.
Yeah.
I mean, it took us, I think, like 18 hours or some ungodly amount of time to get home.
Yeah.
And we get there, no beds for us, no room in the inn. There was nowhere for us to freaking sleep.
Seats taken.
So you're like, oh, well, I guess I need to go home,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
No, that's not.
Well, it's booked. It's
not how it works.
Well, I wasn't about to get back on that road.
Well,
that's the only way out.
Wait. 18 hours, like, no sleep.
No sleep.
Because you can't. I mean, you're getting shot at.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no, we were driving that whole time. Like, we were on the road. We didn't eat. We didn't do anything. Like. And because it was like so slow going, because, you know, we would get hit, we'd regroup.
Everything, this
and
ripple.
Then it just kept happening because we have 1,000 trucks on one road.
So that just does not seem efficient.
No.
Mm-mm. But, you know, who am I to question the Army strategy?
What are you going to do, build another road?
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Well, like, you're right.
Yeah, and at this point.
Now, eventually.
And eventually they did. You know, they did, you know.
When you don't think you're going to be there for that long,
right,
as you are.
And the insurgents had, like, blown up all, like, the airstrips, you know. I was there. I don't know if you guys remember the stories of, like, when they burned all the bridges and blew them all up. So I was actually stuck in the Baghdad airport on a mission. And that was Easter weekend of 2004 when all of the bridges got blown up. And we stopped at the BIOP, Baghdad International Airport. That became, like, main grounds. Anyways, so we would stop there, like, if you had to, like, you know, unload or get gas, whatever. And so we were supposed to just be stopping there for like a mid-mission trip, and all the freaking bridges, because everywhere you go in Iraq is you have to get through a bridge because of the Tigris and the Euphrates River. So everywhere you go, you have to cross a bridge. And so we were stuck there for about a week. And at one point, there was a, I don't know, like there was a suspected break in like one of the fences. And so they apparently were having a hard time fixing it because we were on like high alert that, you know, insurgents could be coming in at any moment. So we had to like literally sleep with our weapons, like at the ready, had to have your, you know, your K-bar knife, whatever knives you had, have them ready. So you go to sleep literally with your M16 rifle laying right next to you. I kept mine on safe, but some people didn't. Like some people had theirs like on fire, ready to go. I'm like, that's nope.
No.
It takes me 2 seconds to flip it.
Not even that.
Half a second just to boop. And, but yeah, so I remember that was a pretty shitty night because I remember laying there, you know, supposed to be sleeping, trying to sleep.
Changes the definition of shitty night.
Yeah.
And I should
it gives you perspective, doesn't it?
And we like when we would stop at places like that, you know, we usually wouldn't be anticipating staying there for long. So you always brought your sleeping bag, but you didn't have there wasn't any like sleeping quarters for you. So we would sleep on the dirt underneath our trucks, on the hoods of our trucks, wherever we needed to be. You know, to sleep. So I'm good.
And that's what I'm saying. You need to.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Because we're like on the edge of our seats.
We are on the
drinking
edge of our
all
seat.
This wine.
We're drinking all of our walking.
I got another
wine.
Bottle. It's fine.
But yeah. So that's how I spent my Easter in 2004.
Hmm.
with my...
We're coming up on Easter here on Sunday. Yeah. So your Easter this year is going to be a little bit different for you.
Yeah. Luckily, yeah. I haven't had any more like that in a long time.
So I want to go back, though. All right. So you're at home. It's first day. There's no beds.
Yeah. So we had to sleep outside.
Yeah.
You know, and it was funny because the unit that we were replacing, they were getting to go home. They were like kind of standoffish with us. Like they were kind of like, oh, you think you're better than us because, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, you're going home. Like, just fucking tell us what we got to do and get out of here. Like, you don't got to be jerks about it. Right. Like, they tried to act like they were better than us. And they had it pretty easy. So, like, all of their routes that they had to drive. So, like, our missions, basically, we had to supply whatever needed to be supplied to all the Marines and infantrymen in Baghdad and then Fallujah. Mm-hmm. So, if you remember, Fallujah was a really bad area. So, Baghdad and Fallujah, not the best spots. But for some reason, the unit we replaced got really lucky. They had no injuries, they had no issues. One dude said they never even, he's like, I never even wore my bulletproof vest. He's like, that's how safe I felt. I was like, huh. I'm like, we just got blown up on the way here. What the, like, where the hell have you been?
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Right. So, like, they just had, like, really good luck, apparently. Or the insurgents just caught on really quick.
Yeah.
Like, after that first year, like, what, you know, what to do.
Right.
Who the real targets were. Instead of targeting the infantry, let's target the little innocent truck drivers who are just trying to deliver some water.
Yeah. I mean, that's military 101, right? Like, target the supply chains, target the infrastructure.
Yep.
Yep, and that goes back centuries.
I know, but we did not learn that lesson, apparently. We had no, so again, I don't know if you guys remember hearing about all the units that didn't have like armor on their vehicles, you know, that weren't protected correctly.
Yep.
This guy, we had on our vehicle, we stole from another unit, sorry, whatever unit you were, but we stole plexiglass and drilled it and put it on top of
our
doors.
Kidding.
Yeah.
Because the things that you drove, they were supposed to be, I don't know what the correct proper term is, but they were supposed to have stuff underneath of it, right?
Okay, I'm picture that. I would not have said that. Like in my mind, I was picturing you driving like a transformer.
No,
you know,
no picture like
literally like a transformer, like semi.
So does she like say a magic word and it transforms?
Yeah,
yes,
that'd be badass.
Yes,
like, yeah,
okay.
No,
and I even know. So I've had the privilege of hearing many of your stories in the past. So I like, what do they call that? I got the spoilers in my head already, but still, I still did not.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, picture this correctly.
So, like, our trucks were basically like tin cans, literally. Wow. Like, you know, the actual structure of those vehicles are very thin, thin metal. So we had sandbags on the floor. That's what was to protect our feet. Sandbags. And then we had plexi.
Yeah, effective.
About half an inch thick plexi on our doors.
Oh, geez.
And that was only some of us.
Yeah.
It was like pretty much at night when we were in Kuwait, we would go fucking scavenge, which I know that sounds terrible. And I probably... If I was still in the military, I could get in trouble for it. But
you know what? You got to do the shit you got to do to survive.
Yeah, our commanding officer told us. They were like, hey, we were checking out this unit today. They got some good shit. Go take it. Mm-hmm. Like, they were giving us permission. Like, go take their shit. And then we had guard duty on our truck so that nobody would steal our stuff back.
Right.
But that's the only type of
protection
we had.
And that changed, obviously.
Yeah,
once,
it got better.
Once word got back that there needed to be more protection on the vehicles and more funding for that. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, you had to just do what you had to do and improvise.
Yep.
Hmm. All right. Yep. Man. Okay. So fast forward. Yep. You're there. You're sitting around a campfire and someone says, Adele, what was the military like? What's your go-to stories? I mean, because there's some big ones.
There's some big ones.
And there's a big one.
Yeah, there is a big one. Uh-huh. I usually ask people, like, when they want to hear stories, I'm like, do you want to hear the Hollywood version? Like, do you want to hear the edited version that I tell, like, my mom? Or do you want to hear, like, the true stories? You know, because...
Well, this is explicitly rated, so we would like to hear the stories.
I want you to share the stories of your, like, you're on probably mile 28 of your live day. So you're in a real pissy mood and you're real raw. And
so you want me to talk about the live day?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
if you were comfortable,
no, I'm good with it. So obviously, you know, like I said, we got hit, you know, a lot. And the pivotal day for me was May 25th of 2004. Started out as a standard day. Well, the day before started off as a standard day. We had a main mission to go to Al Takadam, TQ, which is just north of Fallujah. And, you know, we made it there fine. You know, we stayed the day there because at this point we were driving in the, like, late afternoons and night because it's fucking hot in May in Iraq. Like,
yeah,
ridiculous. 120, 130 degree weather. There's no air conditioning. You're in a tin can all day wearing, you know, 45 plus fat pounds of gear. So, you know, it's hot. So they tried to alleviate us not having to drive during the day. And so we were in TQ the day before. And actually, that's like was one of my funnest days because we had found one of Saddam's private lakes that was on the camp. And you weren't supposed to swim in it, but we would go swimming. Like, we found it a couple weeks earlier. And we were supposed to be sleeping during the day. And we would just totally take a Humvee full of people and just go fucking swim in Saddam's lake. Like, two middle fingers in the air, dude. Like, I'm swimming in your private lake that you made in Iraq. Like, F you. And
I love that so much.
Yeah, like, and it's funny because people were like, oh, no, there's bacteria. Like, you're going to get, like, flesh-eating disease and there's bombs in there. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I could
die today.
People
are literally shooting at you every day.
Like,
yeah.
It's hot. This water is amazing. Like, it's, like, as close as I feel, you know, to be normal. Like, you know, for half an hour. Yeah. If I get in trouble, whatever. You know, if I get sick. And so the day before, I have a picture that I've shared multiple times on Facebook and social media. It's of
And you'll share that with us so we can share it with our viewers.
Yep. Okay. It's of a whole bunch of us standing in front of, like, the one freaking palm tree in, like, that part, like, that little area. It's, like, the last standing palm tree, and we're all standing underneath it in our black little army trunks, and, like, you know, I had a bikini top on trying to look all cute. With my farmer's tan. My neck's all brown. My hands are all brown. We're all white. Like, super just, but, you know, we didn't care, you know. And so that was the day before. And then looking back on it, you know, we probably had our guard down because we had had such a chill day the day before.
Yeah.
And we were on our return run home. So we didn't have anything on our trucks. We're empty. And I found out later that we were supposed to stop again at the airport on the way home for a break because the road that we ended up getting hit on, I kind of just jumped ahead, but oh well. But the things that happened later on that day, that was considered a hot zone. Mm. So we were supposed to detour into the airport
and just kind of chill for a little bit.
Our lieutenant and another lieutenant were in a competition to see who could get home first on different routes. And so our LT, he made the standing call to press forward. And I think it was when we came home a year later and we were super drunk and he was like just crazy, crazy drunk. And he was like, just kept apologizing.
Getting it off his
chest. And he just finally like admitted to it.
Yeah.
Like he'd been holding that in the whole year.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he felt the weight of it, you know.
Yeah.
Was all
yeah.
Sure. And so we took the bypass. We didn't take the bypass. We stayed on the road and there's a big mosque that they used to do all the news reports in front of. Mm-hmm. So we were like right there pretty much when it happened. Like I said, the highway system is very similar to ours. Like Saddam, like kind of mirrored it off of us in Germany, and so we were supposed to be getting onto an on ramp to go up a bridge, and I saw a car coming, and it was looking kind of sketchy. But you know, I let him go ahead of me, and I should say too, like we had standing orders. Our rules of engagement was shoot whoever the F we wanted to. And run anybody over that we wanted to. Run their car over, run people over, do whatever you have to do to survive. Mm-hmm. They later changed that after some different scandals happened. Mm-hmm. But at this time, we had pretty...
Blank check. Protect yourself.
Yep. Okay. It was kind of like Wild West. And so I had like debated like running this car off the road, but I was like, no, I was like, I'm in a good mood. I'll just let them pass. Because that was, I hate to say it, but it was pretty standard.
Like, you had just been swimming the day before.
Yeah, I was chill. I was like, you know what, dude, you're cool today. Like, I'm going to let you go. Like, yeah. you get a green card today. Go. So I get on the ramp and, we're going up the ramp and the next thing I know, just like, it's like an explosion. And, let me back up. Oh my God, I forgot a part. So prior to getting on the ramp, we had been stopped because there was a potential IED. Improvised explosive device on the route up ahead. So we had been stopped. We were patrolling. And my battle buddy, this is the guy I was talking about earlier that was separated from me. So Shane, him and I, like, we butted heads a lot. He's like my little brother, and he's a little asshole. And if he's listening, he probably will. I love you, Shane, but you're an asshole. he knows it. We used to fight all the time. And he would never listen to me, even though I was his ranking NCO, non-commissioned officer. So he kept wandering off, like looking in a ditch. And I was like, get over here. I'm like, you know, get out of there. Like, you know, that's not our job. Like, just get over here, do what you're supposed to do. And he kept back talking me and he finally came over and I was like, whatever, just fucking like you stand right there and pull guard duty. And so we finally get back in our vehicles and we start going again. And that's when we got on the ramp and we're going up, and then just boom, just complete, just darkness. I don't even know. It's always hard to explain. Like, I tell people, if you can imagine somebody throwing like one of the big cinder blocks at your face, not that I've ever had that happen to me, but like, I don't know else how to explain it. Like, mm-hmm. The impact is so strong. I've never felt anything like that before.
Sure.
And I've been in other car accidents and stuff. It's like the wave blast of the explosion is so forceful. It literally just like knocks you senseless. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, like my eyes open first, but it's like black. It's like super dusty. I can't hear anything. I can't really see. But my hands are in the steering wheel and I can feel it. And it's shaking. So I'm like, okay. Like seriously, I don't know if I'm dead or alive. Like, I'm like, what? Like, just so disoriented. Yeah. But I'm like, I can feel it. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to keep pushing my foot down. So I'm like pushing my foot down on the gas. But like, I forgot that I was on a fucking ramp going up a bridge. So yeah. I'm like, just going. Like, don't know where I'm going. Can't see anything, but I'm going. Well, somehow, I was only the second truck in on the convoy. So we still had probably 40 or some vehicles behind us.
Sure.
Somehow I made it up the curve. Like, I don't know how I did it. It must have been that the truck was already turning. So I just kept, you know, going with the natural curve. But somehow I didn't go off the freaking ramp and made it up on the bridge. And at this point, smoke's clearing. And that's when I see Shane. And he's just covered in blood. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what's wrong with him. I can't tell. He's holding his face, you know, and he, you know, I'm still trying to drive though. So I grab the radio because in my mind, I don't think anybody saw what just happened. So I need to tell people.
Right.
So I like radio it in, you know, and I'm like, we've been hit.
They're like, no, like, shit.
Yeah.
We saw it.
Yeah. Like, no shit. Like, your truck just blew up. But like, I like try to follow like protocol.
Right. Yeah, but that's so amazing that the military trains you so well that even you get hit in the face with a cinder block and your first thought is, yeah, I have to follow protocol.
Yeah. It just, yeah. So I, you know, I try to call it in. I can't tell what's wrong with Shane, but I know like he's probably going to need a medevac. So I'm trying to call in a medevac like per like our procedures, but like,
yeah,
I wasn't quite getting it right, I guess. Like, I kept doing things out of order because there's a sequence on how you call things in, like what you need. And meanwhile, I'm still trying to drive. And then I got Shane and he kind of like falls into my lap. And now Shane is, at the time he was 18 too, but he's about like 6'3", 6'4". He's a big kid. He was skinny and lanky, but he was tall. I am not. I'm 5'6". So he falls into my lap. I'm trying to radio. I'm driving. And now I have a guy covered this blood. I don't even know where it's coming from. Just all over in my lap. So I drop the radio. I keep driving, but the truck finally dies. And so I was able to park it. Just because I have a 40-foot trailer behind me. So I'm driving a semi-truck with a 40-foot trailer. So I pull up far enough so that the people coming up the ramp can get by. Because obviously the strategy was, let's blow up the first truck or two trucks, block everybody on the ramp, and then hit them all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was their plan.
Yeah.
So by the grace of God, I pulled up far enough so that everybody could keep going. Yeah. So at this point, I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with them. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin because it's just so much. It just won't stop.
Sure.
And so, you know, I'm like, okay. I'm like, just give me a second, dude. I'm like, I gotta clean you up. And he's just like, just screaming. And I mean, he's in shock. I mean, you know. Sure. And so I kind of push him back towards his seat, lean him up. And I'm like, just stay right here. I'm like, I'll be right back. I'm like, just don't go anywhere. Don't try getting out on your own. And he's freaking out. I like jump out of the truck and I wave down a truck. And we had civilian trucks in with ours. So we had, like, the KBR contractors. The KBR guy behind me, he's freaking the F out. He flies by. He's like, deuces, like, you're on your own.
Right.
Hmm. Which our protocol was, for truck drivers, you just, if somebody's hit, everybody else go.
Sure.
And, like, the last truck will get them, you know. So he goes.
Well, because otherwise, if you stop, you're all going to get hit.
Right. And, like, I get it. But, like, at the moment, like, I felt so helpless. Like, when you're the one, like, being left behind, you're like.
Very different.
Holy fuck.
Like, where's everyone going?
Yeah. So luckily, and a couple more trucks go by, but I got to get him out. I'm like, I got to get Shane out of here. So I go back to the truck. I like pull him. Now I have to pull him across the truck because he was in the passenger seat. Mm-hmm. And the way I parked it, the bridge was literally on the other side of the truck. So there was no going around to his side because I butted up all the way to the railing.
Yeah.
So I drag him across the driver's seat. And I mean, picture a semi, you're up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So then I'm standing down from him. And I have to pull him down towards me and not, like, fall. Right. So I get him out, and I drag him onto the ground, and I'm trying to clear off his face with water. I'm like, I got to figure out what the injury's at. I don't know where to stop the bleeding. And that's when I assessed that he lost his eye because it was hanging from his face. So, yeah. And he, at this point, he was, I don't want to say, I think he was going into, like, numbing shock because he's like, how bad is it? Take a picture. Because he's like real, Shane, I love you, but you're kind of a weirdo. But he was like saying, get my camera, take a picture. And I'm like, whatever, dude.
You're like, that's not happening.
Yeah, right, it's not happening. So at this point, finally, one of our medics comes up. You know, they assess the damage. We get him kind of like just patched up to stop the bleeding. And then we, we get him into one truck. We go drive ahead. I go grab as much shit as I can from our truck. I had to get all our guns and ammo and all of our like highly secure stuff.
Is it just the two of you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I grab as much stuff as I can and jump. Literally, as another truck's driving by, they open up their door. I throw my shit in and I just like literally am like standing on the door, like the runner, just like holding on while we drive. I drove
you get,
down.
You get him in?
Yeah. He got in another truck already. Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So he got in one truck. We got him ahead.
Yeah.
And protocol is you get in like what's called a box formation where you make the trucks into like a box almost.
Okay.
And you usually put the injured person in the middle.
Okay.
Gotcha. It's got to be big enough so that a helicopter can fly down if needed. Yeah. So that was like we had to make a little mini post in the middle of a fucking highway in Baghdad until we could get him, get the helicopter in. Yeah. So if you can picture, I always tell people, like, if you remember where the big mosque was, where the CNN always did all their newscasts, like that's literally where we were on the highway.
Wow.
Yep. So.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So that you call that your alive day?
Well, yeah. So at that point, I didn't know if I had any injuries. I wasn't even thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And I was so blood covered that there was no way to know what was mine and what was his.
Yeah.
And
the adrenaline's pumping. Oh, so yeah. I can't even tell if you're hurt.
Oh, yeah. All I wanted to do was take his machine gun and literally there was a field with some farmers. All I wanted to do, honestly, was just go plow them down. Yeah. Like that was like just like there's so much anger in you and just like just pure hatred.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I hate to say that, but.
Oh, it's so real, though.
Yeah.
So real.
That's all I wanted to do was just kill as many people that weren't American.
Yep.
At the time as I could. And so it was funny because we get into the box formation and I wanted to pull security, because that's usually everybody pulls security until it's time to go. And they're like, no, Garcia, you stay in the truck. And I'm like, F that. Like, no, like I'm getting out. And so finally somebody comes up to me and they're like, are you hurt? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like I was being such a jerk to everybody. I was just pissed. And I was like, I don't know. Like, leave me alone. And then we finally got back to, we stopped in another camp to regroup because everybody was all shaken up. And they take me to the doctor, and that's when they saw, like, I had, like, just a crap ton of, like, just tiny shard, like, shreds of shrapnel all through, like, my neck and ear and all of that. So, yeah. Mm.
So what did they do? Do you get that out? They get it out?
Yeah, they use little tweezers, and they pick it all out. And really couldn't patch it up because it was, like, such a weird place.
Yeah.
And they just, like, put some ointment on it, and it all got infected. And I had to go back, like, three times because everything was, like, festering and gross and stinky. And And I still have, a couple little pieces. Like, I asked the medic. There? No, when he got him out, I was like, can I have some of that? And he's like, I'm not supposed to give it to you. I'm like,
I was just blown up. Dude, come on.
I'm like, just give me the fucking shrapnel. Yeah. Like,
if you don't give me the fucking shrapnel, I'm going to take this shrapnel and shove it up your goddamn ass.
Like, I'm not asking for, like, it wasn't like big chunks. It was like tiny little pieces. I'm like, just give it, like, put them in my hand, you know? So he went and got me a little baggie, and I still have them in the baggie. And he, like, went and got them, you know? For me. He's like, don't tell anybody I did this for you.
Yeah, we won't tell anybody.
And now
don't worry, buddy. We won't tell anybody.
Yeah. It's been long enough. I don't remember who it was. But, So alive day. That's what somebody coined it that. I forget where I heard it. And like the meaning of it's usually like that's like the day, like I should have died. Like in reality, I really should have. You know, like Shane, he should be dead too. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the fact that we got blown up. I continued to drive a truck on a ramp up a bridge without driving off it. Like, it's just like, I don't know how we defied those odds, you know? So like, it's our alive day. Like, that's like, to me, it's like more important than my birthday because it's like the day I was like almost reborn, you know, I got a second chance.
A second chance.
Yeah.
And you've utilized that second chance.
Yes.
To the fullest extent, you know, and you continue to every day.
I try.
Yeah.
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 So, I don't want to skip too far ahead because, there's just so much of the story left. So after that, I mean, I guess kind of fast, take us through a quick synopsis of the rest of your time there. Because that's only a couple months in.
Yeah, that was only in May. And we got there in March.
Right.
Yeah. So it stayed shitty for a while. Like, we got shitty for a while. Yeah, Shane went home. He was injured for sure. Like, he was done. I got hit 2 more times after that. Not anything like that major, but like was like my truck I was in got blown up. So then the joke became like there was like 2 or 3 of us that kept getting hit. We're like, do we have 9 lives? Mm-hmm. Like when's it the final moment? Because there's only certain people that kept getting like hit.
Does that make you scared every day, or does it make you feel like fuck it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I was afraid at first, and then I was like, F this. Like, I am not gonna let these fuckers tell me when to go. And so I actually took Shane's weapon that was a machine gun, 249 machine gun, and I volunteered to take over his spot as a gunner and became a gunner, assistant gunner on the 50 cal machine gunners. I was their A gunner on the gun trucks for the rest of the time.
Fuck yeah, you were.
Yeah.
How much longer were you there?
Until February of the next year, 2005. Yep.
Huh.
Yep. So.
And it was just shitty.
Yeah.
You know, because you're at war.
Yeah.
Fucking Iraq.
You get to a point, though, where, like, it's just normal.
Yeah.
You know, like, you go 24, 36 hours, no sleep, no food. I went there. I was probably, like, 130 pounds. I got home. I was under 100.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, like, you're just so malnourished. But at the same token, like, you still carried your shit. Like, you still got through it. But, yeah.
So then you come home.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like when they said you're coming home?
I don't know. Like, at first, it was almost, you just didn't know how to even cope with it because you got so used to this new life.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was a norm. Uh-huh. And I hate to say it, it's kind of hard to say this, but it almost became easier. Like, you had very easy decisions to make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I either kill the enemy or they're going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm either going to, like, suck it up and not eat for the next 18 hours and deal with it, or I'm going to be a wussy about it and cry. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like, I don't know. It was very easy decisions to make, which that sounds weird, but like it just is what it is. And so then when you find out you're coming home, you're like, wow, what's that like? Like, you know, you completely forget about it because remember I shut those lights off.
Yeah,
so like,
right.
I mean, I got to come home for 2 weeks to visit, but even then, like I was really disconnected to my family.
Sure. Well, you know, that would be so hard.
That was actually something I wrote down as you were like entering your story is, you know, you turn all those lights off. But then you come home, so you have to turn them back on.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's no secret that that's a struggle for...
Oh, yeah.
For many.
Yeah.
For many. And now they do a great job with reintegration. But back then, there was really nothing. You know, we went back to Wisconsin, got medically checked out, made sure you were good, and then you went home. You had 30 days. You got paid for 30 more days before you had to go back to your real job. And that was it. No counseling, no nothing. I can remember... It was wintertime when I got home, you know, and so, I'm still a really terribly fast driver, but, like, I went into, like, a ditch, like, in the middle of, like, winter because I was, like, driving so recklessly fast. You miss that adrenaline, so you just, whatever you can do to get that feeling back.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I flew off into a ditch and, like, sunk my whole Grand Prix into the snow once I came home.
I've never heard it described that way. That you, I mean, but it makes sense. You
miss it.
You miss it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like Alessandra was in preschool and I would go drop her off at preschool. I go walk around Target for like 3 hours, like to kill time because like her school was like a half hour from her house. But, and I would just like watch people. Like it was just weird. Like, you know, you just, everything is different. Like you're like waiting for somebody to walk. Even back then, this is before shootings became so relevant. But I can remember being like in Target thinking, what am I going to do right now if somebody comes in here and wants to shoot my head off? Like, what can I grab? Like, I mean, I've been like that. I've been on that alert level since I came home almost 15 years ago. So, 14 years ago. So like that never goes away. Like I'm always assessing those
wherever
situations.
Wherever you are, you're assessing where's the exit? Where can I get out?
Yeah.
What can I use as a weapon?
Yep.
What happens?
Yep. Yep. How am I going to save as many people around me? What can I, you know, what am I going to do?
I'm so glad you work right by me. Like, she literally works, she's, like, right next to me, and I'm super happy right now.
Yeah, so, but yeah, so that first month home was really awkward, and, you know, I'm sure my husband, he didn't know what to do with me. Like, you know, he thought I was just probably, that I didn't love him anymore or whatever, because I just, you know, I didn't know how to, like, deal with anything, you know?
Well, it's very difficult. One day you're in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
24 hours later, you're back in the United States.
Right. You know, and of course, my beautiful daughter, she didn't know anything different.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, I tried to be as normal for her as I could. And she'll tell you now that she's 17, that she's, her whole life, she's dealt with a parent with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And you know what that's like. So. Mm-hmm.
So talk about that a little bit more. Describe that. Like what, I mean, does that impact daily life? Does that?
It used to. It used to really bad. So, you know, the first couple years, I didn't want to admit that anything was wrong with me. You know, they ingrain in your head to be strong, you know, be that badass. You can't mm-hmm. show your weaknesses. And so I didn't want to admit that there was anything wrong with me. But I would have terrible dreams of like getting attacked and like just so vivid. And I'd wake up looking for my weapon, you know, mm-hmm. and I couldn't find it. And I mean, and I didn't know how to cope with them. You know, I didn't know how to deal with any of that. And I was just like a bitch. And I remember like I worked in retail and I was like a bitch to customers. And I didn't know how to like just channel. I didn't know what to do with it. And that went on for years. You know, I didn't want to get help or anything. And I finally, you know, went and saw a therapist, started working through some of that, you know, and owned up to it. And, you know, really, honestly, like talking about it really has been the biggest thing, you sure. know, giving public speeches, just sharing my story. I don't do it for attention. I don't. Like, I do it because it's almost like mm-hmm. just the more you tell it, it just becomes a story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't almost, you know, it almost mm-hmm. doesn't feel like it really happened to you anymore.
Right.
The first time I gave a public speech, I ended up crying.
Well,
because,
yeah.
like, I couldn't, I thought I was ready, you mm-hmm. know, and but apparently I didn't practice, like, like out loud. And so yeah. I was like, blah, and I was, like, crying. I was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, she's a basket case. But now, you know, now I can get through it and laugh sure. about it. And,
yeah.
Yeah. But it's taken a long time, you know.
Now, you and I have talked about running mm-hmm. as a coping mechanism many times. When did that enter the story?
So off and on. I mean, like, I always knew that running was good for me. You know, I was a runner prior to being in the Army, and then I ran in the Army. But it was probably after, I'm trying to think. I had Anna in 2006, so it was sometime.
And Anna's your second daughter.
Yep,
Alessandra's the first.
Yep, okay. I know. It's really, their names are close. But, sometime right before I had her, I started like kind of like running sporadically, mm-hmm. you know, and I knew it helped me, but I still wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to face those emotions or whatever. Well, then I had her, and she's so funny. She's my spitfire. And that pregnancy really kind of, I don't know if that helped me with my PTSD, because I realized like I had to get this shit under control. Like, I'm going to have two kids now.
Yeah, gotta get your shit together.
Yeah, gotta get it together. Mm-hmm. Pull those big girl pants on. And so after I had her, A, I wanted to get back in shape, you know, but then B, I was dealing with you know, a little bit of postpartum and PTSD. And it was like, fuck, like I got to figure this out. And so I just, one day Milo was home. I'm like, I got to go out for a run. Like I just, you know, and I just went out and just ran. I don't even know how far, a couple miles probably. And I felt good, you know, and I was like, okay, this is right. Like, this is what mm-hmm. I need to clear my head. And slowly, you know, like for the first couple of years, like, you know, when you have a little kid, that's not like you can just train for marathon. I mean, some people can, like badass women who can train for marathons with babies. I did not. like,
yeah.
You know, it was like run whenever I could, you know, because I was working too. And eventually, probably around 2010, I really started getting serious about my running. Like, that's when I realized, like, oh, people have, like, running schedules. And, like, there's, like, actual, like, calendars out there that I, like, you know, to help me. And that's when I really started researching, like, how to run better. Like, up to that point, I had just been putting on my old, I think there was still the same shoes I had from the Army, like my tennis shoes, you know, and just running whenever. So I finally took that step into, like, more, I don't want to say professional running, but
structured.
You know, structured, yeah. And then the Riverbank run in Grand Rapids was really the pivotal moment for me when the first time I ran that in 2011, it was a 25K. So I had ran like a couple little like chintzy, I don't want to say chintzy 5Ks, but just mm-hmm. very low key ones, not even like timed or anything. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to run 25K. That sounds like the next reasonable step.
Right. Why jump to 10K?
15 miles?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, and it's like one of the, I don't want to say harder, but it's a pretty difficult road race. And I did it and I finished and I was like, that was really cool. Like, that's pretty BA. And that was it, mm-hmm. you know? And that's really training for that run is when I really started facing those demons, I call them. Like, I really had, you know, that running, Kaylee, you know, like it strips you down, mm-hmm. you know? And so I had to face those emotions. I had to face all of that because when you're running for a couple hours, you're very vulnerable and you mm-hmm. have to,
you just have yourself.
Yeah. You know, and if you're not okay with yourself, like nobody else is going to be okay with you, and nobody else is going to like you. So
yeah, I had to learn how to. And running is so mental.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I mean it's
100%.
I mean your body can go.
Yeah,
it's your mind you got to convince.
Yep. Yep.
And then you have, you know, you pass the mental struggle and you realize what you can accomplish. You talked about adrenaline a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. The adrenaline rush when you cross that finish line is indescribable.
Yeah. And that's what I also learned.
Yes.
Was that it, you know, it gave me a little bit of that feeling back.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, the running community, you know, 2011, 2012, I was finally getting into social media. You know, I'm a little bit older. In my late 30s. So, you know, I'm a late adapter to that.
Hey, girl, I'm with you.
I know.
I'm with you.
But, so, you know, I was finally getting into, like, really embracing social media and had these little running groups. Mm-hmm. And it was like a little, it was like my own little squad again, you know? And then I started running. I found out, like, people run for charities. I was like, well, no shit. I'm like, I can do what I want to, like, do what I love doing. And then I can raise money for other people. Like, that's even better. So I started, you know, running for different charities and raising money. And at first I always did it like for whatever race I was running, you know, it was very structured. Like they told you how much to raise, you know, gave you your little link and stuff. And that was cool. And then I was like, you know what, maybe I could just raise money for who I want to raise money for and not even have to run a race, like just do my own thing. So I started doing stuff like that in my little community, you know, and just raising money for local organizations that, you know, I was passionate about. And you know, even if it was only a couple $100, whatever, you know, it was still better than nothing. So, and that leads us to last year.
Yeah. That leads us to your big show.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Yeah. So, so the company I work for, that you guys work for too, we have a foundation. And I think it was my first meeting with the foundation.
I think it was because I remember very clearly, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you're not going to run. Who? Okay, cool, Adele. Like, cool idea. Way to show everyone up. 40 miles. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I'll just run 40 miles real quick.
Well, we were brainstorming. ways to raise money. And, you know, like, people were talking about, like, oh, we can do the golf outing. In my head, I was like, oh, another golf outing. God dang. Yeah, everybody does golf outing.
Oh, yeah.
So I was on the phone. I wasn't in person. So I couldn't make it in person. So I'm on a conference call. And I waited for a minute. And I was like, well, I was like, I have a crazy idea. And I, you know, they're like, what? And I'm like, well, I'm like, I've done this in the past where like I'll run for like really long periods of time. And I was like hours, like a day. And and I can do it and raise money. And I was like, and people like really dig it. Like they, cause they don't have to do anything.
Right.
But they feel good. Like they feel good about seeing this person do something so like hard they'll give money. Like,
I'll kick my ass. And other people give me money to kick my own ass.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it really is true. And so it was like dead silent. And then I have no idea what they're looking like because I'm on the phone.
I do. I was there.
what did everybody look like?
What the fuck is she doing?
Everyone was like, it was kind of like you could see the wheels slowly turning in everyone's head. Like,
wait, what?
Well, she's not joking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Let me comprehend that. So 40 miles this year.
Well, what? We hadn't even decided a mileage yet. I think I just said like hours. I said like 12 hours or something.
You said like 12 hours. Yeah. So in my mind, I was already computing what those miles would actually be. I'm like, whatever. I mean, if she wants to do it, like, it's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
And, better her than me.
Right. And so, and then, everybody's like, well, it's January. Like, you know, when are you going to do that? I'm like, well, like now, like we can, whatever. Like, I'm like, I'm ready. Like everybody was like, what? I'm like, yeah. Like, just give me a couple weeks. I'm like,
right.
Just got to prep for it.
We're like, okay.
Yeah. And so then it was like maybe a couple weeks later they were like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I'm dead serious. Like, let's do it. And so then they let me pick what day. They're like, well, since you're going to be the one running, when do you want to do it? And without even really thinking about it, I was like, my live day. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, what? So I, you know, I had to explain that. And
then everyone was crying, basically.
I feel like I'm going to cry right now.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, let's do it on my live day and, you know, raise some money. And then I think you were the one actually that came up with the 13,000, I think.
I did, because it was your 13th alive day, so I was like, fuck it. We're going to raise 13
And
grand.
I was like, oh, shit. Like, it's I've real. Never raised that much money. Like, I've raised, like,
I'm like, if we're going to do this, but... we're going to do it.
And I remember telling my husband, I was like, I'm not worried about the 40 miles or the 12 hours. Like, that's not a fear of mine. I'm like, we got to raise $13,000. And he's like, what? He's like, we have to raise $13,000. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, so get on that shit. Like, start calling people. Like, we've got to raise $13,000. And at this point, it's probably like March. It was like February, March. Like, yeah. I mean,
you got a couple months.
Yeah, no big deal, right?
And yeah. Even up to like a week before, I was really sweating bullets about that. Like, yep. Oh, God, we're going to make it.
How much did we raise?
$13,000.
Like, oh, it was just over 14, wasn't okay. It?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
because even after the run, donations were slowly rolling in. So the coolest part about, I mean, you talk about people rallying to see someone else kick their own ass. It happened. Like, there was not a single mile of that 40 miles that Adele ran alone. So someone from our organization ran with her every single, and we rotated on. You know exactly where. So Dustin.
Oh, Dustin, I hope you're listening.
I hope so too. He never ran like a mile.
Yeah.
And him and I picked up with Adele at about
Benton Harbor.
Yeah, but in Benton Harbor. And
well, he picked me up at St. Joe.
He did. He picked you up even before that. So he ran over a half marathon that day.
Yeah, in basketball shorts and, like, really old running shoes.
And he's, like, he has, like, shin splints, and he's, like, to be honest, like, he looked like hell. But he kept going because it's, like, I mean, really, when you think about, one, why we're running.
Right.
So the story you just told. And, two, 40 miles or 16 or 13 or 10 or whatever anyone else ran. Yeah, you can't really complain.
No.
So it was cool.
I was so concerned for him, though.
Like, I know, I was too.
Every time we stopped, you know, for a break or to walk, I'm like, are you okay, Dustin?
Yeah, like water. You need water.
I was like, you need to eat. I was like, because he hadn't been eating, you know, and I'm like eating at every stop and drinking. Mm-hmm. I'm like, please. I'm like, you're making me so nervous. He's like, quit worrying about me. It's about you. I'm like,
yeah, as he's like keeling over.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was a great day.
That's awesome.
We love you, Dustin.
Yeah. And David Drew, he followed the route in the minivan.
Best David. Crew chief
so
ever.
So he had snacks and he had water and we've talked about Takes a Village many, many times.
Yeah.
But it was probably the best day that I can recall at work. It was so fun.
I love all the stories from it, and it makes me so sad that I wasn't there because it was before I joined.
You said every other year, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so we're going to take a year off.
Okay.
Next year's year 15.
Woo!
So,
I'm ready.
I know.
Yep.
I've got some big ideas.
I'll have a trifecta under my belt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're a badass too.
I'll be ready.
Oh, side note, did you see Matt Malone post a picture? I feel like we talk about Matt Malone a lot. He's just so easy to talk about.
We love him. We can't help it.
Did you see him post a picture on Instagram?
Butter.
Yeah. He needs to do a Spartan.
Yeah, Matt.
I'm just saying, like, you're going to do a trifecta. He wants to do something, like.
Yeah, kick it into gear,
calling
Matt.
Calling you out.
Yep. Kick it into gear, Matt. I mean, the first one, the sprint's June 2nd, and then we're doing the super.
Oh, that's the same day as the sunburst.
Yeah. Well, it's June 3rd. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's a
Sunday? Because we think we're going to do the 5K of the Sunburst.
Oh, do it.
And then drive to Chicago and then run the sprint the next day.
Because that's not crazy.
It'll be fine.
That's
it's
not
just
crazy
a 5K. It's a warm up.
Yeah. No, it really is. Actually.
Honestly, it's just a warm up.
Yep.
And so then we'll go do the sprint. And then a couple weekends later, we'll do the super.
Perfect.
And then in August, we'll do the fucking beast.
Now, did you see?
I'm training. Like, I'm for real training.
You're
so
gonna
be
awesome.
Ready.
You're gonna kill it.
I'm ready.
Adele ran 40 miles.
You're gonna kill it. You're gonna kill it.
I already have like my mindset is on. You know, like when hustlers when you flip the switch on, it's happening.
Oh yeah,
it's happening.
Like there's
so
no,
there's not even a question.
We don't have dimmers. We don't have light dimmers. It's either on or it's off.
No, it's happening. I just got to figure out what to do with my pump and my insulin pump, and I will figure that shit out.
Yep.
And it's happening.
Yep.
Man, I've been rowing the shit out of that rowing machine and some intervals.
Yeah.
I'm ready. So, anyways.
So. With that, we've been ending the last couple segments with some listener feedback, and it actually just occurred to me that we had a message, or I'm sorry, it was an email giving you, Stacy, some tips on running the ultimate.
Really?
So, yeah, because of your insulin pump.
Oh,
so we had a listener, and I'm trying to, like, look for the email.
or was it a Facebook message? But it was recommending a belt that this listener puts their insulin pump in.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I do have a flip belt. So if it's a flip belt, I do have one of those.
It might have been a flip belt.
Okay. So I just got to figure out the waterproof thing.
Yeah.
So I'll just put it in a baggie or something. Mm-hmm. I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
So, figure that shit out.
Yeah, I'll figure that shit out.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, so damn.
Yeah.
Thanks, girl.
You're welcome.
That was a story.
Yeah.
That was a story. And as if I couldn't love you more. You know, I just appreciate everything that you do and everything that you've done. And we didn't even like touch upon all the stuff that you do and continue to do. And, you know, your beautiful girls that you have and your beautiful life that you've created. So happy to know you and be your friend. And I thank you for your service.
Yeah, so. Thank you for having me, guys. Yeah,
it was pretty fun, right?
Anytime.
Now, next week you get to go walk with the dead.
I know. I'm so excited.
And yeah, you can take
maybe one. I could be like a walk on zombie on the set. That'd be
I feel like that feel would like be so you cool. could do anything you set your mind
yes.
to.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll mm-hmm. see, maybe.
So send us some pictures if that happens.
Yeah. We'll miss you next week.
All right. Aww. Well, thank you for listening, listeners. Thank you for Adele for joining us and making this tremendously more interesting than it would have been with just the two of us. So
you are the biggest badass I know.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Don't forget to share us with all of your friends, HIH Pod on social, and you can find us on anywhere you listen to your podcast, Hustlin' in Heels. Give us a listen, and more importantly, give us a share.
Yeah, please, would you?
Yeah.
One more thing. We have some exciting news, actually.
The thing.
On April 26th, which is a Thursday, if you are local, if you are in the Southwest Michigan area, on April 26th, we are happy to announce that at 6:30 p.m., we are going to be doing a live taping of our podcast at the Lazy Ballerina Winery Tasting Room in downtown St. Joe. Our good buddy Lauren, who you will remember mm-hmm. from one of our previous shows, is the owner of Lazy Ballerina. And we are, she is co-hosting with us, and she's going to be there and opening up her facility. So you're going to come in. We're going to put an event out on Facebook here shortly. So by the time you hear this, the event will already be out there. So feel free to RSVP. But come, and we're going to have a live studio audience. We will take live studio audience questions. You will buy some fantastic wine from Lazy Ballerina. I know I've been following them on Facebook, obviously, and they just unveiled their sangria.
Yes, I cannot wait to try that.
Yeah, so you will come and you will join us and we will have the most fun time. Mm-hmm. And we cannot wait to see some of our listeners. So.
Yeah, and you'll get to see firsthand how truly off the cuff this entire production is.
Yeah, we're going to drink a bunch of wine that night.
We might need a driver.
If you want to volunteer to be our driver on April 26th at 6:30.
All right.
We would love to have you. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. See you next week. Bye, hustlers.
Hustlin' in Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Kaylee Gaines, and all views and opinions expressed on the shows are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Kaylee on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHPod. And you can also send the show an email to letschat@HIHPod.com. Feel free to write into the ladies if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. If you've got a question, comment, or to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all we have today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for our next episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.